Source number one, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemar, Darbeo b'nei Yisrael v'chuli truma, me'id kol isha she'edvenu libo tichua trumati. So the first thing that we need to notice is that there is a dramatic shift in this week's parasha compared to everything which took place prior to this. We sort of got used to the narrative in Bereshit, and the narrative took us through to the beginning of the 12th chapter of Shemot, and then in a very interesting way, laws were introduced, but the laws were woven together with the narrative, so we really didn't notice that anything else was happening. We moved over, and then we got to chapter 20, Seret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments, and that also was woven into the narrative, because that was, you know, we're receiving the law. The first shift then takes place in the next three chapters, 21, 22, 23, Parshat Mishpatim. We get laws. The laws there, for the most part, were laws which deal with person-to-person laws. And that also sort of made sense. And then there were little things along the way. I won't test you now, but there was a little things along the way, which is also man to God. But then, and I'm going to say it again, there's a sudden shift in this week's Parsha. Build this place. And now we could be deluded into thinking, Vasuli Mikdash, make for me a sanctuary, Vashachanti B'tocham. So before I translate that, we could be deluded into thinking that essentially God is homeless and God needs a place to live, but we know that that's not the case. And the exact formulation, Vasuli Mikdash, make for me a sanctuary, Vashachanti B'tocham, and I will dwell within you. Doesn't say, I will dwell within it, I will dwell within you. Which means essentially, to borrow from the movie, if you build it, I will come. That's what it says over here. Vasuli mikdash v'shachanti bitocham. And I will dwell within you. Which means what we're really trying to do is to bring godliness within us. And if you think about it, that has really been what the whole concept of all the laws from the beginning is. That's been the Ten Commandments. That's been all of Parshat Mishpatim. Is that the laws over here are introduced in order to create a situation that there is godliness within our community. But what perhaps is strange for us is going to be the building of a sanctuary and therefore a house of God or a house for God. And then we get lost in all the details. And that's part of the problem with this week's Parsha is then to deal, and next week's even more so, is then just to try to make sense out of all the details. So what I want to do is I want to back up a little bit. I want to do more of a macro analysis. And by the time I finish, if I'm successful, this will be the way that you can judge afterwards if I succeeded or failed. If I'm successful, then this week's parsha will make sense. If I fail, then it will make no sense as far as what it's doing here. So I want to start with an argument which we can never get away from, and that's the argument between Rashi and the Ramban. And that has to do with what we like to call chronological integrity. Is this particular portion, or generally, does the Torah follow the chronology which it's written in? Or is the Torah written in a thematic sense, and it puts things in terms of ideas, and not necessarily in the order that they happened? So you can say what difference does it make? So last week we noted that one of the differences it takes is in terms of the Seret HaDibrot. And in terms of Naseh V'Nishma. According to Rashi, they said Naseh V'Nishma, we will obey V'Nishma. Nishma is the problem. Nishma is the problem, what the word Nishma really means. Yeah, Nishma doesn't really mean here, but okay. It means to internalize, and it means to... It also Naseh V'Nishma, did they say this before they heard the Ten Commandments, or did they say this after the Ten Commandments? Did they say this before they heard all of the specific details of Parashat Mishpatim, or afterwards? According to Rashi, who then, no chronological integrity, he claims that chapter 24 comes together with chapter 19 before chapters 20, 21, 22, and 23, which therefore means they said Naseh V'Nishma, we will obey and we will listen or internalize before they heard the Ten Commandments and all of the laws. According to the Ramban, again, I'll keep on saying this, there's a trick to remembering the Ramban. Everything is in the order that was written. Okay? That shouldn't be hard. Just follow the order, and that's the order that it happened in. So chapter 24 is when they say Naseh V'Nishma. It's after they heard the Ten Commandments. It's after they heard all those details in those three chapters of 21, 22, and 23. Oh, it's actually four chapters, 20, 21, 22, and 23. So they heard all of these laws, and then Moshe comes and God says, write it down, reads it to the people. Do you accept it? Yeah, we accept it. It makes it much less romantic, but it's more of a formal contract. Yeah, we'll do this. So now here's the flip side of that we did last week. Here's the flip side of it. The flip side of it is, so what happens next? We get to the very end of last week's parsha. We get to the very end of Mishpatim. Moshe goes up to the mountain and is going to be there for 40 days and 40 nights. What happens when he's there for 40 days and 40 nights? So we'll make this easy for you. He gets the Ten Commandments. Some of us may suspect it's a little more than that, but he gets the Ten Commandments. So let's just stay with that for a second.
If he gets the Ten Commandments, he has a problem. It's a technical problem, but it's a functional problem. What in the world do you do with the Ten Commandments when you come down with them? Where do you put them, right? Just think about that for a second. I think I told the story once before. We had a friend who made a bar mitzvah in L.A., and they commissioned the Sefer Torah to be written, and we got to bring the Sefer Torah to L.A. fully kosher, 100%. When the sofer brought the Torah to my house the night before we were supposed to leave, just where do you put a Torah down in your house? And when you go to the airport, how do you travel with a Sefer Torah? And by the way, El Al was absolutely wonderful with this. My Torah got an upgrade. Not me. No. They took it and put it in a place in business or first class. They were absolutely wonderful and really with a great deal of dignity. But when you come down the mountain and you have these Ten Commandments, what do you do? So now, if you're cynical, you can say, well, Moshe didn't know what to do, and that's why he broke them. You know, where in the world am I going to put this? I got new room in the house for this. I can't believe you brought home more books, right? Okay. So, but seriously, what do you do? Calm down. What do you do with Aseret HaDibrot? So on a functional level, when we get to Parshat Truma, and it says that you're supposed, Vasuli Mikdash, make for me a sanctuary, and the first thing that it's told is the second line, Pasuk Yud, Vasu Aron, and make it Aron. And this is how you make it. Cover it with gold, which I'm going to come back to. Pasuk Yud Aleph, cover with gold. Pasuk Yud Bed is, again, more things with gold. Pasuk Yud Gimel is more things with gold. So for those of you who like gold, gold is definitely a thing over here. Pasuk Tet Zayin, and once you built the ark, Vinatata El Ha'aron Et Ha'edut Asher Etein Elecha. And you're going to place within this ark the testimony which I've given you. So the one thing that you should be sensitive to now is the language. And the language is, why of all the phrases, all the terms that could be used for the Ten Commandments, why, and that itself is something which could be a whole separate class, to note it, all the times the Ten Commandments are referred to in the Chumash and how they're referred to. But over here it calls it, of all things, it calls it the testimony, Ha'idut. The testimony is going to be put inside this ark. So I want to go back now to the more of the micro consideration. According to Rashi, remember Rashi? When Moshe goes up to the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, what does he learn? So apparently, according to Rashi, what he doesn't learn is Parsha Truma, which of course you can ask me, how do I know this? And Parsha Truma and Tetzaveh, which deal with the making of the Mishkan and the clothing of the Kohen Gadol and all this. How do I know, according to Rashi, that that's not what he learned up there? Because Rashi says it. Where does he say it? So you're not responsible for this yet, because it's chapter 31. At the very end, when it says, at the very end of the speaking, God then gave him the commandments, there Rashi says, but the commandments to build the Mishkan were given at a much, much later time. Yomim Rabim, a much later time afterwards, is when they received the instructions for the Mishkan. Because Rashi's of the opinion that the instructions of the, and he says it, the instructions to build the Mishkan are only after the Chet HaEgel. And the Chet HaEgel, if you're keeping track, is in chapter 32. So again, back to our chronological integrity. So chapter 32, according to Rashi, takes place before chapter 24. It's okay. According to Rashi, chapter 35 takes place in the same time as chapter 19. And we can redo the whole book according to the way that Rashi understands it. But I'll say it again. How does Rashi understand it? Thematically, not chronologically. How do we tell stories? We tell stories very often, not necessarily exactly how things happen, because sometimes to explain something, you need to develop that whole idea and take it all the way through, and we're not limited to tell stories in the exact way that it happened. We develop certain ideas, and then we go back to the very beginning. According to Rashi, that's the way the Torah speaks. So therefore, according to Rashi, chapter 24, which is 25, sorry, our Parsha, instructions to build the Mishkan, where is that, what happens next? So therefore, there's something which is interesting, but I want to go back to the Ramban. According to the Ramban, what happens after chapter 24? Chapter 25. So what does Moshe learn up on the mountain? According to Rashi, what he learns is chapters 21, 22, 23, all the Mishpatim, all the interpersonal laws, how to make God, how to take God into our society, how to make our lives holy. how to treat one another, how to have fair business practices. So according to Rashi, that's what happens, that's what Moshe learns up on the mountain, which means essentially for those of us who went to yeshiva, what did he learn? He learned Nezikin. That's what he learned. He learned Nezikin. Now you know why. Nezikin is all the lumdus. And he said, that's what Moshe was learning with the Kaddish. All the Reb Chaims were being learned up on the mountain, and maybe we'll have a chance to come back to that as well. According to the Ramban, what does he learn up on the mountain? According to the Ramban, he learns on the mountain Kaddishim. According to the Ramban, what does he learn? He gets up to the mountain. What does God teach him? He teaches about building the Mishkan. That's the next thing. That's what he learns. He gets to the mountain, and chapter 24 comes next. So there's a huge difference. By the way, notice what's the common denominator. Both of them are about bringing God into our lives. One, bringing God into our lives in terms of the interpersonal relationships and all the laws that exists. And the other one is bringing God into our lives by building a building and bringing God into our lives. It's the same thing, but of course it's different. Right? Are you allowed to have same but different? So, back to chapter 25, and I want to again continue with the Ramban. As far as the Ramban is concerned, and he says this in at least three places, he says this as his introduction to the book of Shemot, he says this as his conclusion to the book of Shemot, and he says it right over here in this week's parsha. You don't have this in front of you because I always cheat and give you four pages instead of my six pages. But according to the Ramban, leaving Egypt, the Exodus, freedom, liberation, is not just in terms of geography, that we left from here and went to there. Ultimately, freedom is going to include self-determination and having our own land. That's going to be a part of freedom. But there's a stop along the way, and that stop is at Sinai. And according to the Ramban, I'm going to read his words from his introduction, V'nei ha-galut einenu nishlam, the exile is not finished, ad yom shuvam el mekomam, until they return to their place. So the first thing is geography, in terms of the place, not just leaving Egypt, but getting back to their place. Ve'el ma'alat avotam yeshuvu, and spiritually getting back to the level of their ancestors, of Avram and Sarah, literally is what he's referring to. Ukishiratsumi Mitzrayim, afal pishiratsumi beit avadim, and they left Egypt even though they left slavery. Adayin yachshavu golim, they were still in exile. Ki hayu ba'aretz lo lahem nivuchim b'midbar, because they were wandering around the desert. Ukishabol har Sinai, but when they got to Mount Sinai, va'asu ha-mishkan, and they made the Mishkan, v'shav ha-kadosh baruch hu v'hishra shchinato b'neihem, and God brought down the Shechina, he brought down God's presence, and he placed it among them, az shavu el ma'alat avotam. It's at that moment they returned to the level of their ancestors. It's at that moment that their lives became like Avram's tent and Sarah's tent. And I mean that quite literally, and all the references that we have midrashically to Sarah's tent, this is exactly what he's referring to. It's at that point that there was a godliness with them. And then he adds a couple of words, right, to the level of the ancestors, Shaha yasod eloka ale oholehim vehem heim hamerkava. It was the secret that God's presence was upon their tents, and that is the Merkava. Now, the Merkava, we just now went into a whole other complexion. Three more words. Va'az nechshavu ge'ulim. At that moment, they became free. So, according to Rashi, we get the sense that the building of the Mishkan was sort of an accident because they made a golden calf and they needed something tangible, and therefore they're told to make a Mishkan and sort of fix this need that we had to make something tangible. According to the Ramban, it's at that moment we reach the highest possible, the pinnacle of religious experience by God's presence coming down. So according to the Rashi, you sort of get the sense it's an accident. So according to the Ramban, it's absolute part of the plan. So that's his introduction. He comes back and he makes the same observation in chapter 25, Pasuk Bet, which is exactly what we are up to. And over here, again, I don't want to read too much, but he here makes an observation. And I'm going to say this again. He says this here, and he says it again at the very end of the book of Shemot. The Ramban notes that the very end of last week's parasha said, Vayishkon kvod Hashem al har Sinai. What does the word Vayishkon mean? What's the root of that word? It's the Shechina. It's Vayishkon Hashem, kvod Hashem, the glory of God rested on Mount Sinai. V'yichaseu ha'anan, sheshet yamim, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. V'yikra el Moshe b'yom ha'shvi mitoch anan, on the seventh day, God called him from the midst of the cloud. Umarei kvod Hashem ke'esh ochelet. And the vision of God was like a fire, which consumes. Berosh ha'har, on the top of the mountain. Leinei b'nei Yisrael, and that's what the people saw. So Moshe goes up into, by the way, now you can realize why they may have thought he was dead. He enters into the fire. It's not just clouds. He enters into the Shekhinah. He enters into the fire. He enters into this place, this literally, this awesome place. From California, it means something else. But this means he goes to this place which is full of awe, full of drama, but it's full of fire. He enters into this. But the point of the Ramban is, and then it says that he's there for 40 days and 40 nights. The Ramban says, but look at the last couple of verses of the book of Shemot, where it says, "Vayichas ha'anan el oh ha'moed." It's the same term. And the glory of God filled up the tent of meeting, the oh ha'moed, where the Mishkan is. "Ukvod Hashem aleh et ha'mishkan." And the glory of God filled up the Mishkan. "V'lo yachal Moshe lavo el oh ha'moed." And Moshe couldn't enter into it. "Ki shachan alav anan, ukvod Hashem aleh et ha'mishkan." And God's glory filled it up. And then God calls to him, which is already the next book, "Vayikra el Moshe," and God, "Vayikra elav." And God then calls to him. That's the beginning of the next book already. What the Ramban notices is that this is the exact same description. Again, thematic connection. The thematic connection is that what happened by Har Sinai is what happens again by the Mishkan. Therefore, the Ramban is going to tell us the purpose of the Mishkan is to take the experience at Sinai and to put it on permanent display in the Mishkan. Now, that so far is what the Ramban actually says, but he goes to so much more detail, and we're not going to learn the whole Ramban inside, but what I do want to do is try to now understand, and everything we're doing today is following the Ramban more or less. I'm saying it could be details or not exactly, but I want you to again to understand the Ramban's approach. The reason Parshat Mishpatim is followed by Parshat Truma is because after the revelation at Sinai, we are going to have this thing built. When we get to, and now, I could have said that the function is, as I've already read, I have the Ten Commandments, what do I do with them? Okay, so build an ark. So if I already build an ark, I need to, okay, you realize that doesn't solve the problem? Because if you build an ark, now you have an ark. Where do you put the ark? So you need to put the ark someplace, so what's the next thing that you need? You need a building. So therefore, that's why, on a logical sense, once God invites Moshe up to receive the Ten Commandments, what's going to follow is, I need an ark, I need a building, I need a Mishkan. That doesn't mean I understand everything else about the Mishkan. By the way, did I already succeed now? Did I already my goal? To understand why I need the Mishkan, why this follows, we can stop then, right? Go get some coffee. Okay. Now, I noted that it says that what you put in, that's Pasuk Kaf Aleph, what you put in is the Eidut, the testimony. Look at Pasuk Kaf Bet, just to realize this isn't an accident. V'no'adati l'chasham. You like the word Eidut and no'adati? Is that the same? What does no'adati mean? What is the word no'ad? Naomi. V'no'adati. Is it connected to Eidut or Eida? And then it says again, V'no'adati l'chasham. I will meet with you there. We will have a rendezvous there. V'dibarti itcha, and I will communicate to you, may Allah kaporet, on top of the covering, me, and it's interesting why this should be called kaporet, mi ben shnei akruvim, from between the two kruvim, asher al arona edut, on top of the ark of testimony, again, testimony, et kol asher etzave otcha el b'nei Yisrael, everything I have to say to the Jew, to tell you for the Jewish people. It continues again, make the shulchan, and it talks about Zahav, make the menorah, and make it out of Zahav. So we find gold, 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 and testimony, and testimony, and testimony. These are the elements which are here. When the whole thing is completed, I hope you like source number two, V'natata oto lefnei ha'parochet asher al arona edut. You'll put it near the aron of testimony, lefnei ha'kapot asher al ha'edut asher iva'ed l'chashama. Again, the edut and the va'ed, I know there's too much Hebrew over here, so let's try to translate some of this. It's okay, but let's try to translate some of this anyway, is that the Ten Commandments are considered to be, that's not the term used here. The term used is testimony. The word for testimony here, edut, again, testimony, is similar to ohel moed, which is the meeting place, but no adati will meet, eva aid, I'll make myself known. And we have over here, the word moed means, or can be used as in both in terms of time and in terms of place, and in terms of content, in terms of a rendezvous. Which means when we talk about the holidays as being mo'adim, what makes them a mo'ed? So the mo'ed is a time that we meet God. It's almost testimony in terms of God. The ohel mo'ed, the place that we meet, it's the same word. So mo'ed is a rendezvous with God in terms of time or in terms of place. And ultimately the Ten Commandments, well, I'll say it the other way around, the Ten Commandments are the ultimate rendezvous with God, and that's the Eidut over here, but it's also, as I said, it's stronger in this particular formulation because it's called testimony. So, did you notice the last thing that was said? Actually, there was a lot of last things said, so I apologize. It says that you're going to, and I'll have this interaction with the gold and the testimony. You're going to make the kruvim, cherubs, if you will. Which is, I guess, that's why appropriate. We always read this parsha by Valentine's Day and happy birthday. Okay, we have the kruvim, and the kruvim are made out of gold, and the mating and the kruvim are of gold. Cover the edut, cover the aron, and from this place, what were we just now told? That when God has to speak, or when God will speak, the voice will emanate from this place. So let's stop now and go back to our Ramban. The Mishkan is the continuation of Sinai. What happened at Sinai? A revelation took place. God spoke. So we could have thought that God speaking is a one-time thing. But now we're being told that it's going to continue, which means when God speaks at Sinai, what does he say? What's the content? Ten Commandments. What happens to that content? It gets turned into something which is, I would call it physical, but it's really metaphysical, right? The tablets which God wrote are really metaphysical, but it gets turned into something which, what would be a better word? It's tangible, it's concrete, even though you'll tell me, no, it's stone. But it's something which becomes real, something which becomes three-dimensional. So, again, the content at Sinai is now placed in the Mishkan. But the way the content was communicated at Sinai is also going to continue from the Mishkan from the exact same place. Which means the Ramban sense that what we have right here is a continuation of Sinai sort of becomes obvious. But I want to make this a little bit clearer right now. Later on in source number 7, when we get to Parshat Pekudei, it's going to call the entire Mishkan. Yeah, whenever I get to this point of the class, it's like, okay. I was about to read the source about Moshe's face glowing, but I totally blew that. Eila Pekudei HaMishkan, Mishkan HaEidut. The entire Mishkan is called Mishkan HaEidut, which is, again, it's a question of testimony, it's a question of rendezvous. But let me pause for a second. There are a couple of points where testimony is associated with the Mishkan, or more specifically with the Luchot, but let me try to explain this. And quickly, in Source 17, don't look at 17, I have no idea what it is. In Source 14, Moshe is standing in front of the burning bush. By the way, hint, the burning bush is Sinai, and it's on fire. This is the same symbol again, meaning this is the starting point. He's standing at the Sneh. The Sneh is Sinai. It's called the mountain of God, Har Elokim Chorev. It's the same place. Moshe is standing at the burning bush, and Moshe questions whether the people will really believe that God spoke to him. But Yom Kiyei Imach, and God says, I'll be with you. V'zelecha ot, and this is for you a sign. So now when you bring evidence for a sign, what's it called? Eidut, that's the evidence. This is for you the sign. Ki enochi shlachticha, that I sent you. Biotziacha ta'am yimitzrayim tavduna telukim al harazeh, that you will serve God on this mountain. Now how is that a sign? So in Source 13 it says, chapter 19, right before the Ten Commandments, Vayomer Shemo Moshe, Inenu Chibay Lecha Ba'av Anan, I'm going to speak to you from the cloud, Bavu Yishma Ha'am Bidabri Imach, that the people can hear and see. I'm adding, when I speak to you, the Gam Bicha Yaminu La'olam, and then they'll believe you forever. So, at Mount Sinai, something happened. Not just the content of the Ten Commandments, But the people are all there witnessing as God speaks. And who is he speaking directly to? To Moshe. That's what the verse says over here. Which means that Mount Sinai, everybody's there. But, you know, it's as if you walk into a room, a lot of people, and then the person speaking only speaks to one person. I remember once when I was in Rabbi Soloveitchik's class, somebody who was a former student, I won't mention his name, who he liked a lot, and I can see he liked a lot, because when he walked into the class, he gave him a big smile, and then for the rest of the class, he only spoke to him. He was just looking at this one fellow, talking to one fellow. Everyone else was in the room, but he was talking to one fellow. By Har Sinai, that's what happened. God was speaking to one fellow. Okay, that fellow's name was Moshe Rabbeinu. But everybody sees that that's who the communication is. That's what this verse says. When we build the Mishkan, what's going to happen? The sound of God's voice, when there needs to be communication, will go to whom? Directly to Moshe. No one else is going to hear this. But everyone else is going to somehow see or understand that there's some communication taking place, which means Har Sinai again gets continued in terms of the Mishkan, not just the Ten Commandments are there, and not just, you know, again, in terms of the content, here are the words, and there it becomes something tangible, not just in terms of that, but in terms of the aspect of Sinai, where there's going to be an ongoing communication, right? Communication, ongoing communication, revelation, revelation, but more than that, specifically going to Moshe, and specifically going to Moshe. Which means, again, from the Ramban sense that this is a continuation, hopefully this is becoming very clear. There is another verse which maybe also we never really paid attention to, but it's, I think it's quite significant. It's back in chapter, okay, it's source number 4, chapter 16. When the mun begins to fall, I want you to notice these two verses, because it'll help you. Well, we'll see how it helps you. Vayomer Moshe el Aaron, kach tzenet, take, we're going to make a time capsule. Kach tzenet achad, v'tein shama meloha omer man. Take a time capsule and fill it up with some of the man. And what is he told to do with it? V'hanach oto lefnei Hashem, and put it in front of God, l'mishmer l'dorotechem, as a remembrance forever, for all the generations. Kasher tziva Hashem Moshe, v'yenechiu Aaron lefnei ha'idut, L'mishperet. And where did he place it? In front of the Eidut. Can you tell me what in the world the Eidut is? The Eidut, from my perspective or perspective of chapter 25, it's in the Mishkan, rear, right in front of the Aaron. Just in case you think I'm not being fair by just jumping into the future, by something that doesn't exist yet in chapter 16, the next verse, Uvnei Yisrael chulot aman or be'im shana, and the Jewish people ate man for 40 years. Both of these verses are a retrospective. That when God tells Moshe to write the Torah, he says, oh yeah, by the way, take some man and put it over there in the Mishkan, and they continue to eat it for 40 years. Here's a verse, again, this is not a simple topic, but this is would be further evidence that Moshe writes the Torah at the very end of his life. This is the Rambam's position. He receives content from God, but he writes the actual Torah at the end of his life, at the end of the 40 years, and in it he includes two things at the end of this chapter over here. Takes a man and put it in front of the Eidut. What is the Eidut? So therefore, realize what's here. You have the man over here as testimony of God's benevolence. You have another thing which is testimony there. Do you remember the whole fight with Korach? At the very end of the fight with Korach, there was a staff of Aaron, which then had flowers on it. It flowered. So there as well, it says the same thing. That's source number 8. And he's told again over there to take the staff and put it lefnei ha'edut l'mishmeret la'ot lefnei meri. That this again should be a moment, a part of testimony. So in front of the edut, which is testimony, we have testimony of the man, we have the testimony of the selection of Aaron, we have testimony of Moshe's selection, which means, and we have the Ten Commandments, which means this place called testimony or edut, we've just now showed at least three different aspects to why this is called a do-it. But I want to try to go a little bit deeper, a little bit further, if we can do this. And it's at this point that I predict I lose all of you. The thing which intrigues me is the gold. What exactly is the gold doing over here? So the gold is, how do you know the gold is the fire? The gold... the gold is the fire. Now, if the gold is the fire, what that means, the Ramban says it. If the gold is the fire, so that means that there's a visual image which we're trying to create in the Mishkan. And that visual image is Har Sinai continuing all the time. A permanent continuation of Sinai, just like Moshe going up into the fire, that all the gold over here, everything which is glowing, is in order to create a visual that there is fire going on in the place. And that's what all the gold is about. You want to see where the Ramban says that? So do I. We like 23? 23. 23 it is. But, okay, I don't like 23. No, it is. 20. He says it. He absolutely says it in 23. But 23, we're scared of 23. Because 23, he says it in the context, I know why it's not there. It's on my page, it's not on your pages. He says it on that source I told you, 25:2. We didn't read all of it, but he writes as follows. From there God spoke to him, Ki kol dibor Moshe yamin ha-shamayim biyom v'nishmam bi-bein shnei ha-kruvim. They were heard from between the two kruvim, Ki derech v'dibrav shamat mitoch ha-ish va'al kein hayu shneihem zahav. The reason that the kruvim were made out of gold was to give the image that God's voice or sound is coming out of the fire in order to replicate Har Sinai. So that's where he says it clearly in 25:2. What I found in that other source that you just now said is he says it again in terms of the sin of the golden calf and says that was part of the confusion with the golden calf because they were trying themselves to replicate the fire and God speaking from the fire, and that's why they chose to make the thing out of gold. But I need to pause a second and to go back again. Yeah, Ramban, 25:2, Kafei Bed. So now let me try again. Okay, let's speak about the Kruvim for a second. So the Kruvim, the cherubs, made out of gold. So one time, a long time ago, I made a claim. I have not found anybody else who said it before. I don't know if anybody said it afterwards, so obviously it had no impact whatsoever. I think we're going to talk more about this next week, but let me just say this. This is not the first time Kruvim are mentioned. Kruvim are mentioned a number of times in the Torah, or in Tanakh. As far as I'm concerned, the most important time that's mentioned is by this Ma'aseh Merkava, which you already heard the Ramban say, Hein Hein HaMerkava. So I need a little bit of explanation what the Merkava is, but then I need to go back again. The Merkava is the vision that Yechezkel has. Ezekiel, Yechezkel HaNavi, goes out, he has visions of God, but one of the things he constantly sees is these things called the Kruvim. Okay, hold on to Yechezkel, we'll put him on the side. The first time Kruvim are mentioned in the Torah are back in the Garden of Eden. Those of you who have been coming for years know that we always have to go back to the Garden of Eden. So now we're there. When we get kicked out of the Garden of Eden, the Kruvim are placed there with revolving swords to protect the path to the Eitz HaChayim. So what is the Eitz HaChayim? So if you look in Mishle, the Torah is Eitz HaChayim. Eitz HaChayim hi l'machzikim ba. The Torah is a tree of life to those who embrace it. What guards the path to the tree of life? The Kruvim. What guards the Aron, which has the Luchot inside it, the Kruvim. So over here, in, again, thematic and a visual sense, we have over here a replaying of one of the earliest scenes that we have in the Torah, where man is exiled, which basically man has lost their identity. Man is kicked out of the Garden of Eden, and I want to go one step further now. The two Kruvim, the way that they're described, is that they're both made out of one piece of gold. They were naked, they looked male and female, and they looked like children. So you put all that together, and what do you have? Children have innocence. It's an innocence which is also non-sexuality, this total innocence within them. But what's particularly important is that they were originally made out of one. The Kruvim are Adam and Eve before the sin. Adam and Eve, before the sin, were male and female, naked in Garden Eden, totally innocent, totally devoid of sin until they eat from the forbidden fruit, and suddenly then they realize their nakedness, which means that when Adam and Eve cover themselves up and are exiled from Eden, what takes their place is the Kruvim, which means that in a certain sense the Kruvim represents Adam and Eve before the sin. Which means that it makes now a little bit more sense that the whole idea of the Mishkan, which is man trying to improve themselves, so much of the Mishkan is going to about bringing the Korbanot. The most dramatic day of the year is going to be Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol will go inside the Holy of Holies, and he will take a glance, and he's going to see these Kruvim, which means most of us can't see it, because most of us will see different things. Most of us, that's really the point. We're not on a high enough level to see what man really can be like, because we're going to see child pornography. We're going to see all kinds of inappropriate things. We're going to, why? Because we are very, very foreign from where Adam and Eve once were. And we are. That's just the reality. That's where we are. And I'm not making any other claims. We are very far from that. But the Kohen Gadol was able to do that, and only once a year able to walk in. There's a Gemara in Yoma that says that when the temple was destroyed and the heathen walked into the temple and they walked into the Holy of Holies and they found these things and they said, this is what the Jews are involved in? Because they looked at, they cheapened it. And it quotes the verse in Eicha. It says that v'hiziluha, they cheapened it, kira'u ervata, for they saw her nakedness. And that's the verse the Gemara quotes, that the pagans walked in, they saw idolatry, they saw child pornography and idolatry, all the sins you can imagine, they saw rolled into one. But what we realize that really was? That was an image of Adam and Eve on the very first day of creation, before they sinned, and we don't have the spiritual, we're not the spiritual even to be able to look at this. Now this was part of what, this is the Ramban's point, this is part of what the Jews experienced at Sinai. At Sinai, when they look up into the heavens, they see or they sense this Merkava. So I'm going to put it this way. The Gemara tells us that there are two prophets who experience God in a profound way. One is Yeshayahu, and one is Yechezkel. The Gemara goes so far as to say they saw the exact same thing. The very end of source number 24, Amar Rava Kol Masher Ra Yecheskel Ra Yeshayahu, anything that Yecheskel saw Yeshayahu saw, Lamai, and then it gives a comparison to how they're different. But there's nonetheless a difference between the two. Yeshayahu, if anyone looks at the verses, he walks, it's source number 20, Bishnat No Tamelech Uziyahu Ve'ere Et Ad Hashem, Yoshev Al Kisei Ram V'nisa, I saw God sitting on his throne. And that filled up the whole temple. And he sees all of these wings, these angels with wings and so on. And the angel said to one another, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzavot, Meloch HaLaretz Kvodo, God's glory fills up the entire earth. And the whole place gets filled with smoke. Now I want you to understand what he sees. He is in the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash is still standing. He sees in the Beit HaMikdash God's throne. He sees in the Beit HaMikdash these angels. He hears the angels say to one another, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. And he sees God's glory fill up the whole Beit HaMikdash. Yeshayahu's vision is of the temple of the Beit HaMikdash. Full stop. Yechezkel, on the other hand, in source 19 it says, Ve'eravi ne elarakia asha arosha kruvim ke'evin sa, I look up into the heavens and I see the kruvim. But what are we just now told by the Gemara? They saw the same thing. One sees it by looking up into the mountain, into the heavens, and the other sees it by looking into the Beit HaMikdash. This is the same tension of what the Ramban already told us. What the Jews experienced at Har Sinai, and if we need to be really clear on this, it's in chapter 24, source 21. Vayal Moshe Aaron v'Nadav Aviyu v'Shivim Zikney Yisrael. Moshe and Nadav Aviyu and Aaron and Aviyu, they went, and the elders went up. Vayiru at Elohei Yisrael, and they saw the God of Israel. V'tachat reglav k'maseh levnata sapir u'ke'et shemayim l'tohar. And it continues, v'yachazu et ha'elokim v'yachlu v'yishtu. They have a vision of God by looking up. They see God's throne by looking up. What they experience at Sinai is what Yechezkel describes by looking up into the sky. What Yeshayahu experiences is the Mishkan, which is built, the Beit HaMikdash, which is built, which is the exact same thing. Which means the Ramban's point that this is the same thing is because it is, in a sense, this glory of God, this experience of God. Now, I want to bring all of this down to our world a little bit more. There's even a comment that I came across that as the Srafim were moving quickly, it says it creates sparks. And the same phrase is used when all the Kohanim are running in the Beit HaMikdash. The Kohanim running in the Beit HaMikdash are supposed to take the place of the angels and whatever they do up in heaven. And I'm just going to stop with that because I'm going to do more with that hopefully next week. But let me come back to what I think may be able to take all of this and make it a little bit more practical, just in case you think everything up is in heaven. So far, what did we say? So far what we said is that the Mishkan is the obvious continuation or conclusion of the experience at Sinai. At Sinai, God said the content of the Ten Commandments. Here we get the Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments came in a different form. It needs a place to be put. When you build this place, God's presence is going to fill it up. It's not just functional in the sense that, okay, I need a place to put it. It's now this ongoing revelation is going to take place. It's that just as God spoke to Moshe at Sinai, God will continue to speak to Moshe. So now the question is, so what does that do once there's no longer a Moshe? So there's really two or three comments that we have time to look at. In Source 11, the Nitziv writes, everything I need to tell you, I'm going to communicate from this voice which will come out between the two Kruvim. Where it's underlined, he writes, Yesh shnei ofnei Torah shebal peh. There's two types of Torah shebal peh. Chad ha-halachot ha-mukubalot me-kodesh baruch hu. One type of the oral Torah of Torah shebal peh are things that Moshe received directly from God. Shenit ma she'ela Moshe ba'amalo u'visaita d'shmaya. A second type of Torah shebal peh, the Nitziv speaks as a Rosh Yeshiva. He says it's the things that occurred to Moshe when he was working very hard and with the help of God. I will tell you all the things I command you. What he said over here is, and of course you can all accuse us of being self-serving and the way Rosh Hashiva is going to look at the way the Torah is given. What he says over here is that when the person who's involved in Torah studies Torah, then God also communicates with them. And that's this part of this ongoing communication. And so I want to say this again. There is the part of Torah Shebal Peh where God gave us information and we passed it on from generation to generation. Tefillin or square. When you slaughter an animal, you do it like this. And the etrog is this particular type of animal. This particular type of fruit. And on and on and on. That's one type of Torah Shebal Peh. There's another type of oral Torah that new situations arise, and we work very hard to try to figure out what exactly is the status of that new situation. Is cooking in a microwave, right? You made a mistake, and you heated up something in the microwave, the milk and the meat and whatever. Is cooking in the microwave the same thing as cooking on a stove? Maybe it's not exactly the same, right? In a stove, you have a heat source. The heat source heats up the pot. The pot heats up the content. In a microwave, the content heats up, and the walls don't become warm. So is that the exact same process? Will it have the same impact on the thing which is holding it? I'm just giving you an example, is that new situations come up, and we need then to make the analysis. What the Nitziv just now said is that that experience is God still going on and communicating, and that still takes place. Source number 12 is the Yismach Moshe, which will apparently be part of your homework. Now, you can't blame him because he's a Hasidic Rebbe. Born in Galicia, moves and eventually becomes Hungary, and eventually becomes the founder of what we know today as the Satmar sect. Came from Galicia, you should know this. This is Rav Moshe Teitelbaum. He says that the same thing as the Nitziv, he lived it a little earlier, but he goes one step further, because he's a Hasidic Rebbe. And he says, a matter of fact, that if we came up with an idea, and you were able to get into the Beit HaMikdash, and you were able to look at the Luchot, the new idea would appear on the Luchot as well. That's what he says. Now, that may sound strange, but I want to show you a Rambam, because we just went from Hasidic Kabbalist, and let's go to our favorite rationalist. In source number 15. The Rambam over here is writing in the Laws of Sanhedrin. This is Perek Aleph Halacha Gimel, and there's two turns of phrase that I want you to note. This is the middle of the halakha. Kama batinidim kvum yizu b'Yisrael v'kama yu minyanam kovim mitchila beitin agadol b'mikdash. To create the justice system, we need to have at first the high court, which means you can't have lower courts without having the high court. The way the legal system works is first you have the high court, then you can have the lower courts, which in a sense become the emissaries of the high court. Without a high court, the lower courts are meaningless. So he starts and he says, Kovim bitchila, the first thing you need to establish, Beitin Hagadol, the high court, Ba Mikdash, in the temple. Now he didn't have to write in the temple. He could have said on the Har HaBayit, he could have said the area, but apparently what he's telling us now is that part of the Beit HaMikdash is not just the place that we need to bring offerings and so on and so forth. Part of the Mikdash is the High Court. And then he continues and he writes, V'hu nikra Sanhedrin Gedolah, that's what's called the Great Sanhedrin, U'minyanam shivim ve'echad, there are 71 people who are a part of this. Shenemar, it says, Esfali shivim ish mizikne Yisrael. It says, gather for me 70 people from the Jewish people, elders. U'moshe al gabeim, so you have 70 plus Moshe. V'hit yatzvu, sham imach, and they'll gather with you. So the Rambam does the math for you. 70 plus 1 is Harei Shivim V'Echad. That gives us 71. Hagadu B'Chachma, the person with the greatest wisdom, Shebekula Moshivin Oto Rosh Aleihem, he's the one who sits in front of them all, V'Hu Rosh HaYeshiva. He's the head of the yeshiva. It doesn't mean a place that you learn. It means the head of the session. Who Rosh HaYeshiva. V'Hu Shekorin Oto HaChachamim Nasi B'Kol Makom. And he's the one who's always called the president, the Nasi. And he sits in the place of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now that was extra. He didn't have to say that. What the Rambam is telling us is that the authority of the Sanhedrin is because, and all courts by extension, which means by extension all of Torah Shebaal Peh, the entire oral Torah and the entire living Judaism has its authority because there's a high court. But where's the high court? The high court is in the Mikdash. And the high court in the Mikdash makes rules. It makes rules, it gives rulings, legislation. Where did this authority come from? This is the ongoing process of the Luchot placed in the Mishkan, but I can't stop there, and the ongoing communication, the place that God still speaks to Moshe. But in case you're going to say, but Moshe isn't there anymore, so that doesn't happen anymore, say, no, that's not the case. Moshe just happened to be the greatest person of that generation. So what happens if there's no longer a Moshe? Then there's the greatest person of the next generation. And what does he do? He sits in Moshe's place. He takes Moshe's place. And what happens then? And this is what the Netziv was describing. And this is what Rav Moshe Teitelbaum, the Yismach Moshe, was describing. That the person who's involved in learning of Torah, there's still a revelation which is taking place. There's still a communication which is taking place. It's not as clear, and it's much more abstract. But it's the authority in terms of, first, legally, the authority of the Sanhedrin to be able to say something is because they sit by the Mikdash and they are part of the Beit HaMikdash. Which means when we're told over here, and I want you now to note something, when Moshe receives the instructions, what's the starting point? It's not that God is saying, listen, I'm really in the mood for a barbecue, can you please bring a couple of offerings here? That's not the starting point. The starting point is not the offerings, it's not the Korbanot, it's not the Mizbeach. The starting point is the Aron so that I can keep on speaking to you. And now you go back to the Ramban's point. Har Sinai was not a one-time thing. Har Sinai continues. Would it continue better if we had a Mishkan or we had a Beit HaMikdash and we had a Sanhedrin? Absolutely, without any question. And would they have more authority? Absolutely, without any question. But God says, Vasuli Mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham. Make for me a sanctuary, and I will dwell within you. That's what the Nesiv was identifying, is that the fact that God gave us the Torah, he gave us this holiness which dwells within us. Vasuli Mikdash. Make for me something which is tangible, which is holy. V'shachanti b'tocham. I'll be within you. And the Nesiv really was understanding it, that as we continue to learn Torah Shebaal Peh, we have the ability of making new rulings, making new applications, having new chidushim, writing new books, having ideas, because God is still speaking to us. Which means when you start to think about this now, so why exactly does the Mishkan come after Har Sinai? Because we should never make the mistake and to think that Har Sinai was a one-time event, and when it ended, 3,300 years ago, there's no longer any communication. What he's saying is the communication continues, God continues to speak, God says, make for me something which is holy, and I will live within you. V'shachanti b'tocham, and I will live within you, in you. There's a lot more communication that needs to be said. Clearly, just again, to make this absolutely clear, it doesn't mean that anything that anybody says today, that every rabbi or anybody who's learned in yeshiva or has an idea, that every single thing is authentic and every single thing is authoritative. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that we would be making the mistake if we went to the other extreme and said that God spoke to us once and never had anything to say to us again. The whole purpose of the Mishkan is to have an ongoing dialogue with God, whereby we can reach out to God and bring the offerings and we can pray, but we can also still listen to God, learn Torah, na'aseh v'nishma. We can still listen to God, because even though we think sometimes God is not speaking, God is still speaking. We can still listen, and that's what learning Torah is. Learning Torah is still listening to this ongoing voice which God is saying to us. And when we understand these ideas, to realize that this is still, you know, it's as if these radio waves were sent all those years ago, we can still tap into those radio waves. We can still tap into the waves of Har Sinai, because Har Sinai was never meant to be just a one-time experience. It's something which still takes place today.